Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Your Passions Could Save a Life, Three Ways to Be There for Every Sailor Every Day conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session in which you will press star and then one to join the queue. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, you may press star and then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call may be recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Dr. Mark Long, Navy and Marine Corps Public Health Center. Dr. Long, you may begin.
Thank you, David. Welcome, everyone. I see some familiar names registered and some new people. We're excited to have you here today. We're very pleased to partner with N171 Navy Suicide Prevention to promote Suicide Prevention Month. So there'll be some opportunities today to write in questions if you're on DCS in the chat box, as well as opportunities to ask questions during and at the end of the presentation. We're in the green zone when we started, and we've had some technical difficulties, and some of us hopefully are in the yellow zone and trying to get back to green zone if this is going on. I'm excited to be a part of this workshop and webinar today because I always learn a lot listening to Captain Smith about what we can do in our commands, what we can do in our communities, what we can do helping our friends and family, and especially what works with addressing suicide. So let me pass this on to Captain Smith, our speaker today. Thank you, Captain Smith.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Long, and good afternoon to everyone out there. Thank you so much for joining the webinar. I do have to, after I introduce myself first, give the caveat that we are having some significant technical difficulties here, so it's Murphy's Law that if anything can go wrong, it will. So probably 10 seconds before we were to begin, my computer died. So we are going to make it happen, but I apologize if there are any disruptions on your end. I want to say it might be the weather coming into the Memphis area, but if you hear paper shuffling, that is me going back to the dark ages trying to do this presentation from pen and paper. So thank you for your patience. As Dr. Long said, I'm Tara Smith. I am a clinical psychologist by trade. I work here in the Navy Suicide Prevention Office, part of the 21st Century Sailor Office. I'd like to thank Dr. Long and the Navy Marine Corps Public Health team for inviting me back every year. They are phenomenal and professional. If left to my own devices, I would just get on the phone and talk, and these folks make this extremely professional for you, so my extreme gratitude to you for all that you do. And if you're admiring the slides, I cannot take credit. We have a phenomenal strategic communications team here. Ms. Caroline Miles is in the office with me. Nicole Long is on the phone, and Shayla Lawrence, they're part of our STRATCOM team. They produce amazing products for our Navy Suicide Prevention Program. I probably give Caroline just chicken scratch on pencil and paper, and she turns it into a beautiful product. So what you're looking at was not my doing. So my gratitude to Ms. Caroline Miles. So this is probably my last suicide prevention webinar, and I wanted to go out with a bang, sort of just tell you everything I know to help you do your jobs better, to protect sailors against suicide, protect yourselves against suicide. Also, I want to make sure everyone knows this is only pertaining to the Navy. We get a Marine Corps participant on the line every year who wonders why we don't mention Marines when we talk about the data and the findings. The Marine Corps has a separate suicide prevention office, so we only take care of the Navy. We are not ViewMed. We don't handle treatment interventions. We are line-focused, so we are responsible for ensuring the entire Navy is educated on suicide, and we collect information on suicide across the Navy. So, again, I'm Tara Smith, and I'm going to walk you through our findings and just how to translate this into what you do to take care of your sailors and take care of yourself. My last disclaimer is that, as I always say, I'm from Philadelphia. I talk fast. Sometimes I mumble. So if you're having trouble with understanding me, please let me know. I cannot see my computer. It did die, so I can't see your questions, but we have a fantastic moderator for this call who will let me know if there are questions, and I'll do my best to answer. Hope to have this done in an hour to leave time for questions and answers for you. So with that, I will get started. Second slide, please. if you're following along at home or the moderator is changing the slides for me. So every presentation has to have objectives. And so the three things we want you to get out of this presentation by the end, we want you to feel comfortable knowing what we know about suicide. So I know conference is a bad word, but we go to a lot of conferences here. We get to consume a lot of the latest research and literature on suicide, talk to the experts in this field. And we try to take that information and translate it into our efforts and then give that to you in the fleet to do your suicide prevention program. So we want to make sure that by the end of this, you know the latest and greatest from the field and the latest and greatest in what we're doing for suicide prevention. We want to make sure that the gatekeepers, the folks that are most likely to interact with sailors at risk for suicide, you know exactly what we know from our deep dive studies of our sailors who die, to enable you to protect, detect, and connect sailors with resources to prevent suicide. And then last but not least, to make sure that we have a unified message across the Navy. Oftentimes, we end up in our commands and our TICOMs doing our own thing, and we're going in separate directions, and we're not really aligned with the DOD. Our office is responsible for being aligned with the Defense Suicide Prevention Office, and, you know, we support you being creative and doing your own thing in your commands as long as you are following the training competencies that the DOD puts out. So we want to make sure that we have a safe, cohesive, and consistent message across the entire Navy on how we handle suicide. So hopefully by the end of this presentation, you'll feel like I delivered, and you feel prepared to do your best in your suicide prevention program. All right. Going on to the third slide, and I'm still not in my computer, so if you hear a bunch of noises in the back, that's my computer still trying to log on. So who are we? Our office is small. We don't have a lot of people in suicide prevention. We also have the operational stress control team, so we have a mobile training team on both coasts that may have come to your command, and they deliver the operational stress control for deck plate and leaders. And we also have a small team of about 10 people that actually handle suicide prevention in the Navy. Most of our team is retired military, retired Navy, and a small handful of active duty. We are very passionate about taking care of sailors. If you ever feel like Big Navy is disconnected, we're not really in touch with what's happening in the Navy, the people in this office do our best to make sure that we are very in tune with what's going on at the deck plate to give sailors and leaders the tools to take care of each other. So it's a very passionate and dedicated team. And at the end of the day, we're just trying to help build resilient commands, resilient sailors, because we don't want any sailor dying by suicide. There is a small number of sailors who die by suicide, so it's a problem, but it's not an epidemic. We want to be careful about how we talk about the numbers. But at the same time, any number over zero is unacceptable. We don't want any sailors feeling like their only option when things get rough is to take their own lives. So that is our focus. We are responsible for your policies. So your OPNAV instructions come from us, your training, your GMT. Those of you in the know, you know that we've whittled down the number of required annual trainings across the Navy. There are five that escape the cut, and suicide is one of them. Suicide prevention GMT is not going to go away because it does impact readiness, and it does impact every sailor in the Navy when we lose one of our sailors to suicide. So suicide prevention training is not going away. That comes from our office. Programs such as SAIL, our strategic communications, our posters, all of our materials. And, of course, we're responsible for the data surveillance. We collect all the information on every death in the Navy, and now DOD has required us to collect information on the deaths of family members as well. So we have a large portfolio here and a small team to do it, but I promise you we are all here for you, and we care about the sailors in the Navy. And at the end of the day, at the bottom, you see our main objective is to communicate that every single leader in the Navy, and that's everyone wearing the uniform as a leader, everyone has a responsibility to create that command climate where sailors can seek help, where we encourage sailors to seek help, where it's possible for them to get the help they need and be welcomed back to the unit or help them transition home if that's the case. But we just want to make it possible for sailors to stop suffering in silence and ask for help. So that's why we're here. That's what we do. And like I said, we're very devoted, very committed, and just good people. All right. Caroline's giving me that cheesy smile because I'm cheesy. All right, next slide, slide four. Okay, these are the things we've done since the last time we talked. So it pains me to no end to tell you that we still don't have assigned suicide prevention instruction, and I can't ignore that. I have to talk about it. We've been working on that since I checked into this command, and it is in the final home stretch. It's in DNS. We just don't know when it's going to come out of DNS. But we do have an updated instruction, and we were hoping to have it this month, and we will continue to check in. And I hope that my replacement is not telling you this next year. But we do have an updated instruction. We are just waiting for it to be signed. So we know that it's outdated. And it pains us to let you know that it's not ready. But there has been, the Command Resilience Team instruction has been released as part of the Equal Opportunity instruction that came out last year. Every command in the Navy is required to establish a Command Resilience Team. And that's an important opportunity for the command to really assess the command climate, just like the climate survey, and to connect the dots for members who are struggling in the command. So all of your program managers, from your CSL to your staff officer, your CIMIO, your suicide prevention coordinator, your chaplain, your leadership, command legal officer, the DAPA, all of those folks may be interacting with somebody at risk for suicide. The sailor who's about to sail another PRT, and they're being shamed because they're being taped in public, and everyone can see them when they lift their shirts. They may be at risk for suicide. The person who's drinking more and more may be at risk for suicide. The person facing legal charges, the person with a family advocacy case. This is an opportunity for the command to sit down and really start putting the pieces together and identify where do we need to give resources early on and get that person the help before we get to that crisis point. We know, those of you on the phone, I think are you know enough about this topic to know that we cannot predict suicide. And anybody who tells you that is selling you something. It is impossible to predict with accuracy who is going to kill themselves. There's a combination of risk factors, a combination of warning signs, multiple stressors, the protective factors have to be included. And so we fail miserably when we try to pinpoint who is the next person to take their lives and when. But what we can do is identify early on who is struggling and get them resources before they get to that crisis point. So that is truly the benefit of the Command Resilience Team. And you should be establishing one and getting yourself on that team as soon as possible. We try our best not to be stovepipes in the 21st Century Sailor Office. We pretty much work between here and Washington, D.C., but we try our best to integrate our portfolio so that we're all talking. I talk to the Navy's dietitian on a regular basis about gut health and how it impacts mental health. I talk to the CFLs about things I'm hearing from my patients when they take their PRT that maybe it can influence their policies on how we do taping and things like that. And so, again, with the Command Resilience Team, we don't want to be stovepipe. We don't want the DAPA never talking to the SVC and the SPC never talking to the CFL. We really want your extra local level to be integrated with your health promotions team, with your chaplain, because that will enable us to better take care of sailors and put our finger on the pulse of what's happening in the command. We've doubled down our efforts on the Sailor Assistance Intercept for Life program, the SAIL program. CNIC, if you're on the phone, we are extremely indebted to you for your hard work. SAIL is finally starting to get the traction that we need it to. Part of the challenges with SAIL is people are still confused that it's treatment. We have a lot of leaders and mental health providers as well that think, well, this is another form of treatment. I don't want the sailor to have that many providers involved. The sailor doesn't want more providers involved. And they're completely misunderstanding the intent of the program. SAIL is mandatory for the referral. The COs, the SPCs have to refer the sailor to the program. Then the sailor has the option to decline it or accept it. But it is a mandatory referral. And the purpose of SAIL is to give sailors that caring contact during that critical window after there's been a suicide attempt or a suicidal ideation expressed. We see in our studies of the deaths that a lot of sailors will go to mental health and then they drop off. They don't want to go back. And it isn't because the providers aren't a good fit, although that may be part of the problem, but many of our sailors don't want the embarrassment of going to mental health. They don't want to miss work. They don't want people asking them where they're going every week. They want to take care of it themselves. They're embarrassed that they need to ask for help. And so many sailors will go for that initial emergency evaluation and then not follow through. And then we'll go through the studies of the sailors who died, and we'll see that this sailor had help a while ago and then just kind of fell off the radar. the SAIL program makes sure that sailors don't fall through the cracks. We've heard from a lot of ships that have embedded resources. Let's take an aircraft carrier, for example. Well, we already have 3 command chaplains, a mental health provider, a DRC. The sailor doesn't need more resources. And that may be the case, but that's for the sailor to say. That sailor may not feel comfortable utilizing the services in that command. And the CNIC counselor will engage with the CO to keep them informed as necessary, so the CO is not going to lose that visibility. So again, we are finally getting traction on the SAIL program. SPCs need you to make sure your COs know that it's mandatory, but it's still voluntary for the sailors to accept or decline. Our sailors continue to die primarily by firearm, and so we have done our best to flood the fleet with gun locks. Everywhere CONUS that we could, from the MTF, we sent them to all the suicide prevention coordinators at CONUS military treatment facilities and clinics. We've sent them to the Fleet and Family Support Centers and to the Reserve Centers. And I think here in Millington, they've given out 200 gun locks. We know that having a weapon in the home just increases the risk of somebody dying unintentionally, whether it be suicide or homicide. Here in Memphis, they have a lot of gun lock commercials. Probably 2 or 3 times a week, we have a child that gets a hold of an unsecured firearm and kills a sibling or kills themselves. And so we just don't want sailors to have easy access to a lethal mean when they're in crisis. One of the suicides we just reviewed, the couple was in a heated argument, fighting. It was getting worse. It was escalating. And the service member was walking around ranting and raving while holding a firearm. That just shouldn't happen. When you're in a heated argument with your spouse, you don't need to have a gun in your hand. That just increases the volatility of that situation. So the more we can give people gun locks and educate them, it's not a Second Amendment issue. We're not taking anyone's guns, but we want you to be safe. And then training and communication, we have updated our suicide prevention handbook. It used to be called the CO's Toolkit, but it's not just for commanding officers. SPCs, it is your responsibility to read that handbook, tab it, sit down with your triad, and discuss the updates with them, because it goes over everything from running a successful suicide prevention program all the way to memorial services and what to do with safe messaging after there's been a suicide attempt or a death at your command. Don't wait until something happens to make sure your leadership is familiar with that. When your command resilience team sits down to meet, discuss the handbook with them. Make sure that the CFLs and DAPAs understand what they can do to prevent suicide. We have our gatekeeper training. If you haven't seen it, it's on our website. We will be updating it this year. Gatekeepers are those people that we see year after year in our studies who are always the ones who tend to know that sailor is at risk for suicide. They are interacting with that sailor who's at risk. And we want them to have more than ask, care, treat. So it goes in depth on the interpersonal theory of suicide, Dr. Joyner's theory, that talks about belongingness, burdensomeness, acquired capability. It gives stills, so it has the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale and the VA Safety Plan. If you're out there still using contracts for safety, shame on you. And so our gatekeepers are families and ombudsmen. Sailors are telling their spouses and their parents when they're feeling depressed, when they're at risk for suicide. We want them to know what the resources are, what to look out for. TPUs. People are in TPU for a variety of reasons, and the staff at TPU were not always prepared to handle those issues. You've got people in TPU for legal issues, pending admin set, pending court martial, going through mental health problems, being left behind by the ship, cooling off period with their spouses. And so we've asked CNIC to make sure that training is available for all of the TPU staff and the ombudsman. You can use the gatekeeper training in lieu of your annual GMT. So you can use that training to document that you've had your GMT, but it gives those additional skills on how to intervene. Schoolhouse instructors. Many of our sailors die in A school. When there's that high risk of academic failure, there's that first A school relationship that goes south, and there's a baby mama drama somewhere in there. We want our schoolhouse instructors to know what to do when that sailor fails A school and they're about to be given an undesignated seaman rating and they're facing going home and they don't have a good home to go to and they don't know what else to do. or the only reason they joined the Navy was to become a Navy SEAL, and they didn't make it through BUZZ, and that's everything. There's nothing else worth living for. And then finally, we have gatekeeper training for our legal officers, whether it be the defense counsel, prosecutors, even the LN1 working with the sailors. We know that a lot of legal staff are concerned about the people they're working with, and they may not feel equipped to ask the right questions, so we've given training to them. We are finalizing the corpsman curriculum, so we have in our new instruction mandated that the corpsmen, whether they be A school corpsmen, behavioral health tech, C school corpsmen, and all independent duty corpsmen, be trained in these enhanced theories and skills. So they're going to be trained on the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale and the VA Safety Plan to hopefully abolish contracts for safety throughout the Navy. So those are some of the big things we're working on. Of course, we're doing a lot of little things. One of the big things we did this year, we had a meeting with all the 4 stars in the Navy just to talk about suicide because it's that much of a concern across the fleet. So there's a lot of things going on. I wanted to make sure you knew what we were doing. All right. Hopefully I'm not talking too fast or Caroline will glare at me. Going on to the next slide, you should be on slide 5 with me. So as I said, you know, suicide is a complex problem. There's no one risk factor that predicts suicide, and even combining risk factors will not accurately predict who will die by suicide. Suicide is going up in society, so if you're paying attention, we have an increasing suicide rate across America. I think we just looked at every state, and the only state that has a suicide rate that's not going up is Nevada. Don't know why that is, but every other state in the country is showing an increase in suicide. We're seeing an increase in areas, particularly where there's high gun ownership, where the economy is not doing so well. So although overall we have a low unemployment rate, there are segments of society, parts of our country, where people may have income, but they're working 2 and 3 jobs to make ends meet, or the only skill they had, they no longer have employment, such as coal mining. And in those areas, you have high gun ownership. You have that culture of rugged individualism where I want to fix it myself. You may not have access to mental health providers, so a lot of folks aren't rushing to be the mental health provider in rural Wyoming or rural North Dakota. So the Navy Model Society, we have struggled with suicide in recent years. Again, I want to be careful about talking about numbers. Our suicide rate is stable. Although we've had an increase in the count of suicides, last year we had 70, which was a high number, at the end of the day, that's a thousandth of a percent of 420,000 active and reserve sailors. So when we compare ourselves to society from ages 17 to 60, which is our Navy population, we are well below the civilian rates. So again, suicide is a problem. It's not an epidemic. And it's a complex problem. There's not one contributing factor, and there's not one solution. So I drafted out the ecological model here just to show you some of the challenges we face with combating suicide nationally and in the Navy. Societally, we have a lot of gun ownership, and we are very limited in how we can address that. We are not allowed to register firearms. Off base, we are not allowed to ask sailors who owns guns. So, you know, it seems common sense to us that we treat it like a safety issue, like motorcycles. I'm allowed as a leader to know if my sailors own a motorcycle. I'm allowed to make sure they wear PPE. I'm allowed to make sure they go to extra classes to be a safe motorcycle rider. We are not able to do those things when it comes to firearms, even though they are the largest method of suicide, societally and in the Navy. We do have our NAV admin, 263/14, that says anytime you are concerned about a shipmate or a subordinate, ask them to store their personal firearm in the base armory. And that's a tough conversation for some people, but if you think about it like drinking and driving, you have a party at your house, you don't let your buddies drive home drunk. You take their car keys, you make them sleep on your couch, you call an Uber, but you don't just let people get behind the wheel of a car when they've been drinking. And it's the exact same thing with firearms. If your buddy is going through an ugly divorce, there's an ugly custody battle, there's allegations of infidelity, there's increased drinking, the person seems to not be doing well, if you're just concerned and you've got a gut feeling that something's not right, Ask your buddy if they own a firearm. Leaders, ask your sailors if they own a firearm. Whether you're the DAPA, the CFL, the CIMIO, the SAFR officer, if you're concerned, ask the person if they own firearms and would they be willing to store that firearm in the base armory until the crisis calms down. And all we're trying to do is put some time between the crisis and the suicide. We know from multiple studies that most people who died by suicide did not want to die. They wanted the problem to end. They wanted the crisis to be over with. They felt hopeless. So simply buying them time, you know, now your gun is secured in the base armory, maybe you'll go for a walk, maybe you'll drink, maybe you'll do something else destructive, but it's not as lethal as having a firearm, and that's the attitude behind that. Nationally, we struggle with attitudes about mental illness. If you watch the news, every time there's a mass shooting or something bad that happens, the first thing that people talk about is that person had a mental illness. And hopefully all of us on the phone know that most people with mental illnesses are not violent, but that is certainly the portrayal in the media. So we have very negative attitudes about people who have mental illnesses. Depression and anxiety are very common. PTSD is common. It doesn't mean the person is a threat to national security. It doesn't mean they're going to be an active shooter. It doesn't mean they're violent. But those attitudes make it hard for people to come forward and ask for help, and that's certainly true in the Navy as well. The Navy is a community just like other communities in the country. When I talk about coal mining country in Kentucky and West Virginia and Wyoming, when I talk about American Indian reservations, when I talk about remote areas in Alaska, you know, every community has their own attitudes towards mental health and seeking help, and the Navy is no different. Suicide has a huge impact on that Navy community. Your command, if a sailor dies by suicide or a sailor attempts suicide, that increases the risk for everybody else in the unit. We had a suicide here on base, and I talked to four sailors who told me just how impacted they were by that sailor who died, and that they had been suicidal the whole time as well. And so now they were even more concerned, because if he couldn't handle it and he was senior to me, how am I going to handle it? And so suicide, suicide attempts, somebody saying they're suicidal, all of that can affect other vulnerable people. And how we talk about that person seeking help can either make things better or make things worse. And we have our own Navy cultural attitudes about seeking help. We study the deaths in the Navy. Aviation consistently, those sailors do not ask for help. I mean, there is no evidence whatsoever that the sailors who died by suicide in aviation even talk to a chaplain. They don't let anyone know that they're suicidal until they're dead. And we see the suicide note or we talk to their family and friends who knew, but they never went for help. And so we have our own community attitudes about help seeking that are barriers to solving the suicide problem. Relationships in the Navy and in society are huge risk factors for suicide. In this last study, we inappropriately dubbed it the year of infidelity. These relationships where there's accusations of infidelity, there's actual infidelity, there's custody battles, there's unrequited love, I love this person and they rejected me, that's a huge risk factor for suicide. My chief here in the office likes to say that humans are pack animals, and I think that's a great way of describing it. We want to be in a pack. We want to belong. We want to fit in, whether that's with our family unit, with our actual work unit. Humans need to belong. That's why the belongingness component is on the new DEOC survey. And so when people feel rejected, when there are these high conflict relationships and there's a threat to that sense of belongingness, that's a challenge to dealing with suicide. And at the individual level, many people who die by suicide have either diagnosed or undiagnosed mental illnesses. And I'll discuss our deep dives and how we get at that. But many of our sailors who died by suicide were struggling with mental health problems, whether or not they let someone know. Substance misuse, increased drinking, that's hard for us in the Navy because part of our culture is work hard, play hard. And we're very reluctant to ask another sailor about their drinking. We don't want to be that guy that ruins the fun and talks about increased substance use. But it's heartbreaking when we study the deaths and we see somebody that has open containers of alcohol all throughout the house. And people knew that that person was drinking at that level. And no one once asked the person, hey, do you think you need to slow down? Lowered frustration tolerance, lack of emotional regulation, basically the inability to tolerate your feelings. We see that in society, and we see that in our Navy studies. And, of course, access and lethal means at the individual level. All right, going on to slide 6, if you are still with me. And I still cannot get on my computer, so I apologize. Thank you to the moderator for pushing the slide for me. So one of the big things we do in Navy suicide prevention, if you've heard this webinar before, you know about this process. It's called our multidisciplinary review of suicide, or the deep dive. Every year we assemble a team of the brightest minds we can find to study every single death that occurred in the Navy. And our last study was a 2016 death. We tend to be a year or two behind because of the amount of information we collect. So if you read the DOSTR report, that's just based on the DOSTR. So we don't tend to be as far behind as we are because we collect the NCIS investigation, which can be hundreds of pages long. Includes everything from photos to interviews with family and leadership and peers and intimate partners. We review every medical encounter the individual has had since they came into the Navy, as well as their MEPS records. We look at any family advocacy and state and family reports. We look at their CRIM. Did the person have declining PRT scores? This was especially relevant when two PRT players could end your career. We look at every eval and fitness report to see if there was that fall from glory. They were the high performer, and now they're the significant problem. Our STRATCOM team, they pull all the social media so we can see their Facebook, their Instagram, their Pinterest. Sometimes because of NCIS, we can see the final text messages that were sent prior to the person dying. We look at their post-deployment health assessments, their annual PHA, and, of course, the DOSTR and our own CNO report that we provide to the Chief of Naval Operations after talking to the commands right after the death. So it's an extensive amount of information per sailor that we look at as a team to understand what is happening to our sailors who die, how can we use that to inform our policies and programs. This team is made up of the finest epidemiologists from Navy Marine Corps Public Health. They are fantastic. We have members from NCIS. We have representation from mental health providers, of social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists. We have chaplains, ViewMed representatives. Paul Finch, I know you're on the line. We have fleet representation. This year we invited a current commanding officer and a current CMC to get that deck plate perspective. We have reserve representatives and research psychologists. So we try to make sure we have a great team of people to look at the death from every angle to make sure we leave no stone unturned. And so this is our spiral downward that we're always very proud of that kind of walks you through what happens to that sailor before they die by suicide. And so this is a slide that you can keep because it not only tells you what to look out for, but it tells you what resources we have in place to aid you in intervening. And so I took the statistics out this year on purpose because the numbers vary year to year, but some of the findings are pretty stable. For example, we know that many of our sailors who die by suicide had some prior mental health problems or even suicide attempts before coming into the Navy that they simply didn't disclose to MEPS. We rely on self-report. We don't have a national electronic health record that allows us to look and see if there was deception. And so many of our sailors come in with some pre-existing mental health conditions. Sometimes they were diagnosed, sometimes they weren't, and we get that from interviews. So mom may say, oh, yes, my daughter attempted suicide when she was 14. We just didn't tell anybody. Or we see that the sailor told his spouse that I struggled with depression and thought about suicide my whole life. I just never told anybody. So we know from looking at these studies that sailors that died by suicide, usually about half of them had some mental health problems that they just didn't disclose. And that really gets at the importance of a trusting command climate where sailors feel comfortable letting you know that they've got these previous issues that lower their resilience, lower their frustration tolerance, and make it harder for them to tolerate what the rest of us might look at as normal stressors. So the rest of us might think, so what, you had a breakup, so what, you went to captain's mass. I've had a chief tell me, I went to mass 3 times, it's no big deal. You know, some of us may look at these problems and think, why is that a big deal? Why would you kill yourself over that? But we have to remember that everybody comes from a different background, and they may have had things in their past that affect their ability to cope differently from us. Many of our sailors, they have multiple stressors going on prior to their death. So relationship problems. Between 70 to 90% of our sailors who died by suicide had some type of chaotic relationship going on. Like I said, we called 2016 the year of infidelity. I mean, every single one was, I thought my spouse was cheating, my spouse was cheating, or we're going through a divorce, and it was an ugly divorce, the kids were involved, we're talking about custody battles, or, you know, you're the only person I ever loved, and you broke my heart, and that's posted on social media. So the warning signs were there. Sailors who are facing legal problems, and they're pretty sure they're not going to be allowed to stay in the Navy. So sailors who pop positive for drugs, especially child pornography. You know, when you have a sailor who's been pulled aside by NCIS for investigation of child pornography, you want a warm handoff, because many times those sailors don't make it back to the unit or don't make it home. Financial problems, which is much bigger in society, but it's still a factor for our sailors. And then work problems. We don't see a whole lot of bullying and hazing and things like that going on, but certainly what the sailor perceives to be toxic leadership, demanding, unapproachable, unpleasant work environment that just makes it miserable to go into work every day. We see the sailors who die by suicide have these multiple stressors going on, not just one, but many. And then they go through this disrupted social network period where they're not with their unit, they're not with their team. So the high-risk periods are that PCS. We have so many sailors who die within a week of reporting to their next command because they don't have that support system. Sailors who are in TPU, they're pending separation. Sailors who are pending retirement. Sailors who have just been relieved. And so you're no longer the CMC. Where do you go? People know what happened. It's in the Navy Times. You just got busted down, and now you're about to go to this command over here. So when a sailor's in transition, leave and liberty, most of our sailors do not die on base. They do not die on duty. They die when they get off work. And then we have the warning signs. You know, prior to the sailor dying, a week before dying, we look and see, were there these warning signs? And sure enough, they were. The sailor was talking about suicide. They were saying, I feel like giving up. I feel like killing myself. The most tragic, I think, this past year, we had several cases where during the interviews, people said, you know, this person said it all the time. They always said, I might as well kill myself. And so it became the boy that cried wolf and no one listened. Again, substance abuse. We don't want to talk about a sailor's drinking, no matter how bad it gets. So you all know is past warm. Those warning signs were there, but people didn't speak up and intervene, or the sailor didn't let anyone know. Because we certainly have the opposite, where sailors can go to work and put on their game face. No one knows they're having problems. They're hardworking. They're hard charging. They're sailor of the year. And everyone thinks everything is okay. But at home, all these other problems are going on. And then as the person has their world crashing down, they're not sleeping. We see a lot of undiagnosed insomnia. The sailor simply was not getting sleep for years. I had a sailor yesterday tell me she hasn't slept well for 12 years in the Navy and just never sought help. She just is accustomed to not sleeping. And then in that final window, that last hour, most of our sailors, we look, they weren't thinking about suicide when they woke up and they weren't planning it for weeks and months. But in that final hour when the sailor was feeling overwhelmed and out of options, there was an unsecured firearm, and the sailor took their lives. So that's sort of the story of what happens when a sailor dies by suicide. And beneath that, you can see some of our efforts to deal with it, to address it. So we're definitely pushing embedded mental health. I know when I became a psychologist, everyone was telling me, don't get a degree in psychology, you'll never get a job. That couldn't be further from the truth. This is a great time to be a psychologist. There's a nationwide shortage. There's a Navy-wide shortage. We are desperate to get more mental health providers embedded in these units. Because when you see the psychologist or the psychiatrist or the social worker every day, it just becomes less of an issue to talk to them, especially when they're as cool as I am. We have our training. One of our new efforts is the One Love. The One Love training, if you haven't seen that, it's from the Courtney Love family, the family whose daughter died in a domestic violence incident. Courtney Love, what is it? Yardley Love. Okay, Oh, Courtney was a drug addict. Caroline's over here making fun of me. So, yes, Yardley Love. She was killed by her boyfriend, and her family established the One Love Foundation. And it's phenomenal training. We've been piloting it throughout the Navy. It just talks about healthy relationships. What's a healthy relationship and what isn't? Because, again, we see toxic relationships all throughout these suicides. and of course our command resilience team. We had one suicide where, you know, people around the command knew that every time this person was on the phone with their spouse, it was controlling, it was yelling, it was negative, it was nasty. And there were people who could have connected the dots, but because of the high visibility of the command, you know, the members seemed to have it all together, you know, we don't really connect the dots and talk to each other about these things. We have our in-transition program, so anybody who's had mental health treatment should be enrolled in the in-transition program when they leave the Navy. And then if you forget to do that, the in-transition program will contact them to ensure they get that continuity of care when they leave the military. So the President's executive order allows 1 year of mental health care after separation, even all the way down to an other than honorable discharge, just to make sure there's not that disruption in care when someone's being separated. Of course, we have our SAIL program and our circadian watch bill. We know that everything improves in the command when sailors are getting sleep, and the Navy average for sleep is about 5 hours. And so we partner with Naval Postgraduate School. Dr. Nita Shattuck has created a circadian watch bill that helps commands use a 24-hour workday instead of a 30-hour workday to help sailors get better sleep. It's better for safety. It's better for destructive behaviors. Simply, everything improves if sailors get sleep. We've got our prescription for discharge on how to properly dispose of medications. BuMed has done a wonderful thing down in San Antonio. They've modified all the barracks to make it nearly impossible to hang oneself because on base, hanging is the primary method of suicide. So thank you to BuMed for doing such a great job. All right, I'm on slide 7. And I'm talking longer than I thought, so I apologize, but I know you're enjoying it, so yay, all right. So, this is one of our fantastic products from our STRATCOM team, Ms. Caroline Miles, Nicole Long, and Shayla Lawrence. We know that sailors listen to sea lawyers and sea doctors more than they listen to us. I had a sailor yesterday tell me her entire career she was told, do not ask for help, do not take medications. You will lose your career, you will lose your security clearances. So she suffered in silence for 12 years. We are constantly trying to refresh our campaign to educate sailors, but that is simply not the case. Most sailors who seek help do stay in the Navy. We're in a retention environment right now, so it is getting harder and harder to separate sailors for anything. So there are sailors who do go home. There's always more to that story than what you're hearing because it's a confidential conversation between the provider, the CO, and that sailor. But most sailors who get mental health care stay in the Navy. The challenge is they don't walk out of mental health and tell everybody, hey, I'm getting great mental health care. Captain Smith is the best psychologist ever, because I am, and I'm keeping my clearance and I'm keeping my job. Sailors don't walk out of mental health and tell that story, and so the only stories we hear are the sailor that went to mental health and was separated, and there's so much more to that story. Less than 1% of security clearances are lost for mental health reasons. You simply are not likely to lose your security clearance for going to mental health. It has no impact on your willingness to safeguard classified materials. Now, if you need mental health care and you decide not to get the help and you continue to engage in destructive behaviors and get DUIs and have alcohol incidents and you keep being late to work, poor judgment will impact your clearance, but not asking for help. Even if you're taking medications, even if you're going to treatment, those are all signs of good judgment. You will keep your clearance. But sailors are also worried about just how we treat each other. We're afraid that we're going to lose the confidence of our leadership. I had a lieutenant who was sexually assaulted by her lieutenant commander, and she refused to report it because she did not want her boss to lose faith in her. She actually believed that being a victim of a crime meant that her boss would no longer trust her to do her job, and she was so proud of the job that she was doing. Sailors are worried about gossip. I always say that in the workspaces, when the captains aren't around, the Navy is like the Lord of the Flies. I mean, you got sailors just tearing each other down, and they think it's fun and games, but sailors are vulnerable sometimes, and we don't know how they're taking that laughter and that joking around in the workspace. You know, we have sailors who attempt suicide after suicide training because we make fun of the topic. We don't make it clear that we really do care. We support you getting help. Oh, and we'll keep it confidential. Sailors worry that their business is going to be all throughout the command, and that's simply a lack of professionalism on our part. I always say that I can't write a policy that makes people care and grow up, and I can't, but that's what we have to do. We have to care and we have to grow up. Next slide. All right, so I've talked about the scope of the problem. I've talked about how suicide looks in the Navy, how it looks in society, how we're struggling with it. You know, a lot of times we get questions like, what are you all doing about suicide? Are you doing anything about suicide? It's hard. It is very hard. There are so many dynamics. And there's the individual at the end of the day who, if the individual doesn't want us to know they need help, they simply won't let us know. I'm a psychologist. If I were suicidal, I could make sure you didn't know that I was suicidal because I know what to say. I know what to do. I know how to act. We all know how to put on our game face and make sure people think that we're okay. And so to a large extent, we need individuals in the Navy to have that courage to speak up when they need help, regardless of the fear of consequences, regardless of the fear of what your buddies may say. You know, honor, courage, commitment. Have that courage to say, I'm going to take responsibility for my health, and nothing is more important than my health. So life goals are protect, detect, connect from the CDC, shamelessly sourcing them. And so things that individuals can do to protect themselves against suicide, self-care. We suck at self-care in the military. Our sailors eat like crap. And if you understand the relationship between gut health and mental health, if you eat like crap, you're going to feel like crap. And that's scientific. Just as I said, that's scientific. Eat like crap, you'll feel like crap. Sailors don't get enough exercise. You know, many sailors, they drive to work, they sit all day, they drive home, they watch the Netflix, and they go to sleep. We're not moving our bodies enough, and we know that exercise is just as beneficial for mild depression as that Prozac you're taking. And getting good sleep. So being on Instagram or Fortnite until 3 in the morning, then you have to go to work at 5, that's not good self-care. You need to trust somebody. Let somebody know that you're struggling. I like that there's a lot of pages on Facebook where sailors can talk to each other and share how did you get help, what was your experience. Most of it is very positive. A couple of discouraging comments, but overwhelmingly sailors are reaching out to each other saying, hey, it's okay to get help. And we have to have those conversations in our workspaces. Individuals need to practice their own lethal means safety. I am not against firearms. Everyone has a right to own a weapon. However, you need to know when you need to secure that firearm, put it in a safe. I talk to sailors in therapy who keep unsecured firearms at home. They live in rough parts of Memphis. I'm not against them for doing that. But then we talk about when will you know that it's better to put that firearm away? When will you know that the risk is too high for you to use that against yourself? When will you know to have that conversation with your provider that you don't need that many pills to take home with you? And so that's part of the safety plan. Individuals have to know when they need to enact their safety plan. Self-awareness, understanding when you're at risk. Many of us simply don't do a good job of checking in. That's the beauty of mindfulness, that self-awareness. How am I doing? Am I in the green, yellow, orange, red? Am I really handling this as well as I thought I was? Do I really need to ask for help? And a lot of folks, we disconnect. We're not in touch with how we're doing emotionally. And then connect. You know, it's embarrassing to let your family know you went to Captain's Mass. It's embarrassing to let your family know that you've got a drinking problem or that you're not managing your finances. But your family probably does care. Your leadership probably does care. Your friends probably do care. We all have this mindset that we're the only ones with this problem. No one else has ever had this problem. And I always say, if you think you're alone, listen to country music, because somebody's singing about your problem right now. It's not possible that you're the only person in the world who's ever had this problem. You know, in my therapy appointments, I tell people, there's no way I've been in the Navy 20 years and you're my first patient. Clearly, other people have come to see me in the past 20 years. You're not the only one. So let people know what you're going through. Let somebody know that you need help. And get involved. If you feel like you don't belong, you're not part of the team, you have to do something about that, too. There's Comrels, there's Creole retreats, there's CSAT, there's volunteering in the community. But take that personal ownership of your health. And, again, these are things you can do. If you never do a webinar again, never talk to Captain Smith again, this is your go-to guide. Next slide, family and friends. So over and over again, we see that families and peers knew this person was at risk for suicide. They knew that there was a drinking problem. They knew that they were worried about their DUI. They knew that there was domestic violence at home. they're reading the social media post where the person is saying over and over again, I can't believe she broke my heart. I can't believe she put me through this. I can't believe it's over. And you see this person spiraling downward, and we don't intervene. And so that's the main reason we made the gatekeeper training for ombudsmen and families. Families need to be comfortable starting that conversation and asking, are you okay? Are you thinking about suicide? Are you feeling like giving up? Support that self-care. Go for a walk with your spouse. Get them out of the house. Promote that positive coping skill. Families need to get involved with lethal means safety. So that's why Sweeten families have the gun locks too, because spouses need to take those guns home, those gun locks home, and secure the prescriptions. I had a friend whose mother recently died of cancer, and she had a ton of medications in the house, many of them opioids. And I said, let's take all these pills to the pharmacy and get the right paperwork to get rid of them, because you just don't need them in the house. You don't need your mother's pills, of her bottles of opioids in the house when you're depressed about losing your mother. Let's get rid of these medications. That's what families and friends have to do. Be aware and get involved. Be aware of the stressors that may increase suicide risk. So when the person is just not able to get a hold of their finances, they're just constantly in debt. I had a young sailor recently who had taken out 3 or 4 loans, and every time he tried to get out of one loan, he ended up making another loan. He just kept digging his hole deeper and deeper and deeper because he didn't know how to do a budget, didn't even think to use his galley, eating at McDonald's every day, and was just getting himself in a hole because he lacked those life skills. Be aware of legal issues. If you're a command on the phone, don't take sailors to captain's mass on Fridays. You pick the sailor up from jail on Saturday, make sure someone's with them. Pay attention to relationship problems. I'm always joking about my mother telling me that men are like buses, and if you miss one, there's another one coming in 15 minutes. So I grew up thinking relationships are no big deal. You know, you break up, you make up, you have some good ones, you have some bad ones, it's no big deal. But that doesn't mean everyone else has that same perspective. If you see someone taking it really hard that they lost that relationship, lean in. And when sailors transition, when they PCS and they're leaving the Navy, stay engaged. You know, who does that sailor talk to when they're on PCS leave? The command has had their farewell. The next command, the sponsor said, hey, let me know when to pick you up. But who's actually letting that sailor know that you're still a part of our Navy family? Watch out for social media. We've got some training coming online pretty soon about social media and how to pick up on the signs of social media. Families need to understand the resources. So your service member may be telling you, hey, don't talk about this to my command. I'll lose my career. The chaplain's not confidential. I don't believe the chaplain's confidential. They're going to go tell the CO. Families need to know the facts for themselves. And so we try very hard to get commands to invite families to NDOC when they can, make sure the ombudsman is pushing resources. We highly recommend that COs, when a sailor checks in, that you send a letter home to that person's next of kin, whether it be mom, dad, spouse, just saying, hey, I'm Captain So-and-so, you know, happy to have your sailor on board. You know, this is a rewarding command. However, it's also challenging. There are these stressors that may come up. We need you to know what the resources are if your sailor needs help, because you may notice before us. And we really need commands to make sure that families have the resources to tell their sailors the truth about getting help and get them to help. All right, next slide, leadership. So we know that leaders are just trying to stay on top of everything they have to know, and it's nearly impossible. And I don't know how commanding officers stay aware of every single thing that they're responsible for. We know that it's tough, and this is where we rely on the suicide prevention coordinator. It's your job to make sure your CO knows this information. So, leadership, you set the tone. You need to set the tone that this climate, this command, supports you seeking help. We all know that we've seen leaders say some really dumb things after a sailor has attempted suicide, or they've said some dumb things about a sailor who needed help. And that gets around. You know, sailors hear loud and clear how the command feels about help seeking. I remember a sailor telling me that they were having a discussion in the workspace soon after the Larry Nassar situation with the gymnast. And one of the female chiefs said out loud, you know, why are they bringing this up 20 years later? It's over. They should be over it by now. Let it go. And meanwhile, there were two sailors in that conversation who had also been sexually assaulted. And that communicated to them that it's not okay to ask for help. I cannot go to her to ever talk about the sexual abuse that I experienced, because she just said her attitude is, it happened a while ago, let it go and move on. We have to be very careful as leaders how we talk about help seeking, how we talk about those who need help, so that it's very clear that, hey, I have a job to hold you accountable. I'm going to do that job, but anytime you need me, that's what I'm here for. And you can do both as a successful leader. In fact, I will challenge you that if you can't do both, you are not a leader. So leadership, you are required to have a suicide prevention coordinator, and that person must be trained by us, and they should be training you. COs, you need to understand that you can ask a sailor to secure their firearm voluntarily on base, but all leaders can do that. I don't care if you're a third-class petty officer and you've got a seaman who's having some problems. Ask about firearms and invite them to store that weapon. Like everybody else, leaders, you need to know the risk factors. You need to know when that sailor's going to captain's mast and they're not looking good, do a warm handoff to the chaplain. We've got to stop dismissing relationship problems. They're huge. When someone's been relieved, that's huge. Engaged leadership is the key to everything. It is simply the key to everything. You have to know your people. Now, a lot of sailors don't want you in their business, but if they know that you care, they'll let you in. You have to know your people enough to know when things are changing. And again, that command resilience team is required. You need to lead that team and really support the importance of it. I just went to Suicide Prevention GMT this morning, and I had to pull the instructor aside because you started off the GMT by saying, you know, we have to be here, we have to do this, thanks for showing up. And that just sets the presenter up for failure. You know, we want to make sure people understand we're talking about our shipmates here. We're talking about our peers, and we don't want to lose them. And so how you talk about it, how you engage with your sailors, how you utilize the training opportunities you have, that sets the tone for that vulnerable sailor who needs help, who may not come forward if you don't create that command climate. Make sure families know that they're a part of our Navy team. Our sailors couldn't do what they do without their families. Make sure families feel valued. You know, there's a lot of negative social media about spouses. I won't get into some of the horrible words that are used to describe spouses. But that's that sailor support system, and they're valued to us. They sacrifice their careers. They move all around the world with us. Families are important, and we want to make sure they feel valued. COs need to understand the value of the SAIL program. Don't poo-poo it. Don't discourage sailors from using it. You know, make sure you understand that it's required so that your sailor can stay engaged with care and not fall through the cracks. And last but not least, for leadership, we still find leaders that feel like they can't talk to mental health when there's a sailor getting care. Commanding officers can always talk to the mental health provider. And we still have mental health providers that say the wrong things and say, oh, this is HIPAA protected. We can talk to commanding officers, and we should. The commanding officer has ultimate authority and needs to know if that sailor is fit for duty. So if a sailor is at risk for suicide, particularly an imminent risk, you need to be talking to the CO. But also, other leadership in that command can have a one-way conversation with medical. I absolutely want the chief to call me and tell me the other pieces of the puzzle that I may not be seeing or hearing to take the best care of that sailor possible. So we have placemats that go into great detail on what the provider should be telling the leadership and what leadership should be telling the provider and what's protected and what's not. You need to be familiar with that, because oftentimes, medical and leadership were not communicating, and that could have saved that sailor's life. I am now on slide 11, almost there. And so this is what we're focusing on with medical. I do want to say thank you to everybody in the medical community. We didn't see a single contract for safety in 2016. That's huge. So we're grateful that we're getting rid of that. If you haven't heard me say it before, you should never use a contract for safety. We still see the verbiage in the medical documentation, and I'm pretty sure I was guilty of that before I came to this office, where we use the phrase, the patient contracted for safety, but it doesn't mean they signed an actual contract. We do want to see more safety plans, and we are. And, you know, for medical to keep in mind, what we're seeing in a lot of these studies is that sailors will deny feeling suicidal the day that they kill themselves, and that's just how volatile suicide risk is. It's very fluid. The person at the time may truly have felt safe. But we don't control what happens when they leave the office. And so remember to take into consideration things they're not telling you. Look at that history of impulsivity, that history of poor frustration tolerance, that history of poor emotional regulation, impulsivity, coping skills. Look at the access to lethal means. You should always be documenting access to lethal means, whether that's prescription drugs, firearms. They live on the 13th floor. They walked up to the 13th floor and thought about it. We need to always be asking about access to lethal means and documenting that. Make sure you collaborate with commands. Make sure you give the command the tools to take care of that sailor, because you see that sailor once a week. The command sees that sailor all the time. And again, only about 30% of sailors who die by suicide will ever talk to a mental health provider. That means the other 70% are interacting with their commands and their peers, and we need them to be our eyes and ears as well. We are not doing so well with diagnosing insomnia. You know, we know that just treating insomnia alone improves depression, improves suicide risk. It's not enough to keep giving out Ambien without referring the person to cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. We need to give the person tools. We need to address why they're not sleeping, not just get them more sleep. So we need to get away from relying on sleeping medications, and we need to go ahead and make that diagnosis. You know, you may have the major depression, the PTSD, and you don't think to diagnose insomnia because you think, well, it's a part of the depression, it's a part of the PTSD, but if it's not, make sure you diagnose that insomnia and address it in the therapy, because it's going to improve everything else. Even though we're not dietitians as mental health providers, have that conversation about nutrition. Talk to the patient about how they're eating. I've talked to patients who are literally eating an apple and a Funyun, a bag of Funyuns one day, and that's all they're eating, and they think that's okay. Because that's how they grew up, you know, a bowl of cereal and a pizza, or, you know, the breakfast of champions with a Monster and a cigarette. Our sailors don't know proper nutrition, and we are supposed to be educated enough to know how that impacts their mental health, how that impacts the medications they're taking. So have that conversation. Refer them to the dietitian if you're not comfortable. But make sure that we're addressing self-care. Use evidence-based tools to identify risk. You can always ask more questions, but try not to rely on simple mnemonics like SAD personas, because it may not be enough to address all of that person's risk factors. So don't be afraid to ask more questions. Be careful to ask about belongingness. Does that person have a support system? Do they feel rejected from their unit? Do they feel like they belong to their unit? Is that relationship going well? Is that relationship all they have? You know, when we ask patients in the safety plan, who would you call at 3 in the morning, and they list three names, you need to follow up and ask them, would you actually call? Are they actually going to do it? Because many times they're going to say, no, I'm not going to bother that person. You know, our concept of friendship is one way. I'm there for you, but I don't want to burden you when I have problems. And so we need to address that. And again, for mental health providers, we need your help to get leadership involved. Help them with the tools to take care of that sailor, reintegrate them back into the unit, or assist that sailor with going home if that's the case. But remember that leadership may not always have the same mental health tools that we do. We need to walk them through how to take the best care of that sailor. Sale is not optional. You have to put the referral in. I'm going to call out psychologists here. We're the worst offenders in telling sailors they don't have to go to sale. They have to get the referral. They have to have that first conversation with sleep and family, and then they can say yes or no. But it is not our call with mental health providers to say, you don't need that, don't do that. And we may have our own biases, and the patient may not feel comfortable telling us they disagree. Let sleep and family have that conversation and let the sailors say yes or no. But what our conversation should be, our story should be, this is extra support to make sure you get all the resources you need. We don't want you to fall through the cracks. All right. And I have to say that right after I made this presentation, the Be There support system was discontinued. It wasn't being utilized. And so if you call the peer support program, you'll be referred to Military OneSource. So that is a recent development. At the American Association for Suicidology Conference, they said that a lot of folks are not using crisis lines. They're not getting utilization that they should. But please continue to push those, the 1-800 number, the VA military crisis line. The 741-741 number is not DOD, so some people prefer not to have any DOD relationship. And then the in-transition program, make sure there's that warm handoff to the civilian sector when sailors get out. All right, two more slides to go. Hopefully I haven't tormented you all. So this slide 12, was one of the graphics we created for the 12-star meeting when all the 4-stars in the Navy got together with the CNO to discuss suicide. And I'm not going to go into this slide because it's very busy, but it's something you can hang up on your wall at work on your bulletin board just to help you as a leader understand what are the risk factors, what can we do to protect sailors, and what are some of the Navy-wide and civilian resources we have at our disposal to take care of sailors. You know, that sailor is trying their best to get to the top to try to make it, and suicide is not always linear. You know, there's not like 1 + 1 = 2, and the sailor has thoughts of suicide, and they make an attempt, and they go on and kill themselves. Like I said, it's a very discontinuous process, and so a visual is the sailor stumbles, loses their footing, and falls off the mountain. That is how suicide is for many of our sailors. They think they've got it under control. They're trying their best to manage it themselves. Sometimes they're getting help, but they feel so hopeless. And then it's that tipping point, that last insult to injury, that just makes them lose their footing and they fall and they die. And so most people who die by suicide do not want to die. There is so much that we can do to take care of ourselves and take care of each other, and things we can do as a Navy to take care of that sailor and to prevent sailors from dying by suicide. The very last slide is a listing of our resources. So just a reminder that, you know, we're using this during Suicide Prevention Month to kick off our efforts for September. However, suicide is a year-long conversation. And that conversation is not asking somebody once a week, are you suicidal? That's not suicide prevention, because at the end of the day, a very small percentage of the Navy is actually going to go through with killing themselves. But we know that there are thousands of sailors suffering in silence who just wish they could open up to their peers, wish they could open up to their leadership, and they don't feel comfortable. So suicide prevention is truly about that command climate. It's about making sure we're having conversations all the time that say very loud and clearly, if you need my help, I am someone you can talk to. I tell a story that happened to me in Japan on one of our summits. We partner with PAC Fleet to do their summits. We were talking to a crowd of hundreds in the auditorium in Yokosuka of TACIs, chiefs and officers, about our program. And there was about a line, it took me about an hour to talk to all the sailors who waited to speak to me after the presentation. And at the very end, there was a commander who was waiting until everyone else had left the auditorium. This was about an hour after it ended, and everyone else had gone to lunch. And he wanted to talk to me about something that had happened to him. And this commander explained to me that he was a surface warfare officer. He had 16 years in, and that, you know, he was very much devoted to the Navy, loved the Navy, had given his all to the Navy. But he had just PCS'd to Japan, so we're talking about that transition period. He had just PCS'd to Japan, and his mother died tragically in a horrible accident. And it was unexpected. It was tragic. It was horrible for him. That was his best friend. And he just spiraled downward. Soon after reporting, he had to go home on emergency leave, grieve his mother's death, take care of the arrangements, and he came back to work. And he went back to a high-op tempo. Again, he's a slow, he understands mission, and he went back to it. And he said he was struggling silently for months. And he said the hardest part was that not a single person in his chain of command or a single peer asked him how he was doing after losing his mother. Not a single person that he worked with, not a single person in his chain of command asked him, how are you doing? We're sorry about your loss. How are things going? And here is a commander with 16 years in who had been driving ships for over a decade, who was becoming tearful. And he said, you know, I've loved the Navy for 16 years, and for the first time in my career, I feel like the Navy doesn't love me back. You know, and he said, I don't know why I waited to tell you this story, other than I just really need to feel like somebody cares. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what suicide prevention is all about. You may not identify the person who's next to go through with killing themselves, but you may be the person that makes sure a sailor feels cared about, a sailor feels connected, a sailor feels valued, and that the sailor knows that somebody cares. And so whether it's the plan of the week messages, whether it's at quarters, the LPO is saying, hey, you know, we just lost Aaron Hernandez. We just lost Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. If you need help, absolutely let me know. And if I hear anybody gossiping about somebody asking for help or talking about somebody, you know, you'll be squashed. You know, we need to make sure that sailors know every day that even when I'm holding you accountable, I love you, I'm here for you, and I don't want anything to happen to you. So we have phenomenal resources. Like I said, our STRATCOM team is the best. I don't know how they do what they do, but what they do is impressive. If you go to our website, which is listed, we have posters. You can order them from the Navy Logistics Library. But they put a lot of time into our products. They don't make them up in their heads. They test them in the fleet. They do pilots. They do focus groups. So these are products that sailors have told us will resonate with them. You have your military crisis line, military one source, and of course the DISPO site, the SPARC site. We have lots of resources on our website to help you find more information. But truly, we need you to help us. As a psychologist, only a third of the sailors who need help will ever come to me. I'm relying on all of you. And with that, I will end my presentation and say thank you for what you all do in the Navy. Thank you for being great shipmates. And I am done. I will take questions because I can't see my computer. Are there any questions on the line to me?
And again, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you do have a question over the phone lines, please press star and then one on your touch-tone telephone. Again, that's star and then one if you have a question over the phone lines. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. And we do ask that you please place your line on mute once your question has been stated. Again, that's star and then one if you have a question at this time.
And I'll need you to read it to me because I honestly cannot see my computer. So basically, I did just a fantastic job, and I answered everyone's questions about suicide prevention, because I will accept that.
And I do have a question here in queue. It comes from Kima Sose. Your line is now open.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. I'm calling from Naval Station Everett. I just had questions about resources for reservists.
So our PHOP program is the primary resource for reservists, psychological health outreach program. That is managed by ViewMed. They do run a similar SAIL program where they'll do the caring contacts for reservists. We do study the reserve deaths, and we incorporate that into our findings. But, of course, we have much less information on the reservists than we do the active duty, so we are putting together a working group to better understand how we can gather more information on what's happening with our reserve population. But their primary mental health resource is the Psychological Health Outreach Program. They are very active and engaged with those NOCs.
Okay. And my understanding is that SAIL can be a resource for reservists if they're activated?
Absolutely. But when they're not activated, PHOP will perform the SAIL duties.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. And again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star and then one if you have a question at this time. Looks like we have a follow-up question from Kima Tose. Your line is now open.
Sorry, that was a mistake. I was trying to mute myself again.
They're going to charge you more, so that's good.
Thank you. And it looks like we have a question from Randall Bushu. Your line is now open.
Hello, thank you. Great training, I appreciate it. I had a question about confidentiality with the chaplain's office, and I was wondering, the sailor goes to a chaplain and lets them know that they are suicidal, is the chaplain's office, are we still required to submit the SAIL enrollment for that case?
So if it comes to another person that they were suicidal, because the chaplain has absolute confidentiality, the chaplain never has to inform anyone. Whether a sailor is suicidal, homicidal, they have bodies in the basement, the chaplain can take everything to God and that's it. And so only if that becomes known to the command can we enforce that. So chaplains are sort of untouchable in that respect. So if the sailor only goes to the chaplain and they don't tell anyone else, then no, you can't send the SAIL referral. We can't compel the chaplain to tell us so that we can submit the SAIL referral. So now if the chaplain does compel the person to get help, and they get help and the command finds out that way, then yes, we will do the SAIL referral. We should. but we sort of can't touch the captains. And that's, you know, that's a double-edged sword, but we do want sailors to know there's someone they can go to if they feel out of any options. I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I'm showing no further questions in queue. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question over the phone lines, please press star and then one on your touchtone telephone. Again, that's star and then one if you have a question at this time. Looks like we have a follow-up from Randall Bushu.
I'm ready. Bring it.
Thank you again. Who was it that you said had the 24-hour workday watch bill?
Oh, the circadian watch bill, that was developed by Naval Post Graduate School. It is on our website, so if you go to www.suicides.navy.mil, it goes into detail on how commands can put together a 24-hour watch bill. Instead of many commands where you have six on, six off, it doesn't end up being a 24-hour day for the sailor. And it goes into how best to implement that, like how do you do the evening prayer? How do you do morning quarters? How do you do all hands? Because we know that sailors who work night shifts always get shafted on their sleep because they still have to get up and do all the drills. So the circadian watch bill tells the command how best to implement a 24-hour watch bill to get sailors as much sleep as possible. And I can't emphasize enough, when commands get more sleep, and we studied this, when commands get more sleep, everything is better. There's fewer mishaps. There's fewer sexual assaults. There's fewer EO complaints. There's fewer suicide attempts. There's fewer people accessing mental health care. Sleep is the key to life. And if sailors aren't sleeping, nothing's going to go well. So even if you're on a ship or a submarine, we know there's op tempo, but to the best of our abilities, we want leaders to make sure their sailors are getting adequate rest. So it's on our website.
Captain Smith? Hi.
Yes, sir.
Mark Long. There's a question on the chat that you don't have access to, and the question is, what are the resources for gun locks?
So we have distributed free gun locks to all of the NOCs, the Fleet and Family Support Centers, and the MTS. So all the hospitals and clinics, the SPC, Suicide Prevention Coordinators, all the hospitals and clinics have gotten gun locks. We know that the NOCs are out. We just requested 20,000 more. And so we are getting them free from the VA, and we order as many as possible, and we ship them out as soon as we get them. But you can also go to your local gun shops. They will give you free gun locks. Your local police departments will give you gun locks. Your local VA will give you gun locks. Or you can pay for them. I think they're $8.50 each.
And again, ladies and gentlemen, over the phone lines, if you do have a question at this time, that's star then one on your touchtone telephone. Looks like we have a question coming from Jorge Larranaga. Your line is now open.
Hello there.
And Jorge, if your line is on mute, please unmute. Or if you're on speakerphone, please pick up your handset. Your line is now open.
Hey, good afternoon, ma'am. Thank you for your talk. It's been very insightful. I'm working at a joint command out here in Springfield, Virginia. What if one of my sailors doesn't feel comfortable if he goes to a, let's say, to another branch? Do they have to refer him back to me, and then I refer him back to out, and then I refer him to, refer him out under SRB, or how would that work?
Are you asking as a suicide prevention coordinator?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so the question is, if a sailor doesn't feel comfortable going to a Navy facility, and let's say they go to an Air Force or Army facility, how does that work with you getting them the sail referral? Is that your question?
Yes.
So you don't have to do a sail referral if the person simply goes to get help. So if a sailor just feels comfortable getting mental health care at the Andrews Air Force Base instead of Walter Reed or instead of the Pax River, whatever, the sailor doesn't necessarily have to have a sail referral. If the provider says the person is at risk for suicide, so let's say the Army doctor says, oh, this person's at risk for suicide, or they made a suicide attempt and they inform the CO will inform you as the SPC to create that sail referral. But simply seeking help does not mean you need a sail referral. Now, you can volunteer to participate in sales, and the command can offer that to anybody. But if a person is simply getting mental health care, that's not a sales referral. If the doctor tells the CEO this person had a suicide attempt or they're suicidal, the CEO should inform you as the SPC to generate that sales referral. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am, it does. And as well as building the command resilience team, should I include other members of other branches as well?
Absolutely. If it's a joint command, absolutely. So, you know, they're not part of our Navy requirements, but that's a smart idea for the command because, you know, it's one team, one fight. So your legal officer may be Army and your CMO may be Air Force. And so if it's a joint command, get them all involved because you as a Navy member are required to be a member of that team.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brenna Coase. Your line is now open. And Brenna, if your line is on mute, please unmute, or if you're on speakerphone, please pick up your handset. Again, Brenna Coase, your line is now open.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
My question is, earlier in the training, you mentioned that DOD requires us to report family members as well. I was wondering which family members does that cover? Is it immediate family members? Is it husband, wife, children?
Okay,
how do we report
that? All family members, and that's our responsibility. So that is not anyone else's job to do but ours. Currently, their requirement is that a service member, when they have a death of a family member, should be putting that in DEERS. So if they're covered by DEERS, so if the parent is a dependent, if it's a child, if it's a spouse, if they have a death by suicide in their family, they're supposed to update that in DEERS, and that's how we get that information. That has not been followed consistently, and so we are, Congress is not very happy. We're not reporting accurate numbers, and that's because, you know, I can't force a sailor, I mean, even though the instruction says it, I don't know if that sailor didn't report a death in the family. So currently what we're doing in the Navy is using the FSGLI. So we know when a family, when a service member asks for benefits for that member, that's how we find out they had a spouse or a child who died by suicide. So we're responsible for gathering that information and reporting it. And all we need is a service member to report that in DEERS, and that's how we find out. So no one else has to do that with us.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you. And again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star and one. If you do have a question at this time, we have another question from Kima Tose. Your line is now open.
Yeah, I just have a question about the command resiliency team. Is there any reference that I could go to that says, like, what the membership of that would look like?
Absolutely. So that's on our 21st Century Sailor site. So if you go, unfortunately, we are on the NPC website. We cannot get off. So you have to go through some hoops, unfortunately, and I apologize. If you open up your web browser and you go to the Navy Personnel Command, one of the tabs is for support services. And under that is the 21st Century Sailor Office. Under 21st Century Sailor Office is suicide prevention, equal opportunity, sexual harassment, sexual assault, and you will see equal opportunity and sexual harassment. It is their instruction, and on their website is going to be not only the EO instruction that dictates the establishment and the membership, but there's now also a command resilience team guide that walks the command through how best to set up and leverage that tool.
And can civilians be a part of that tool?
I don't see why not. If you're a member of that command, you're a member of the family, we want your eyes on too.
Okay, thank you.
So it doesn't say who can't be, it just says who has to be. So
okay.
If the command, hey, my ombudsman is critical and I want my ombudsman on the team, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Captain Smith, Mark Long, there's one question on the chat line from Teresa. Has there been evidence of gun locks being used?
So, you know, we don't know what's not happening. You know, it's sort of like saying, how do we prove that suicide prevention is working? I don't have a crystal ball that tells me who's not dying by suicide. So all we have is anecdotal evidence. We have people saying, I don't believe they work. But we also know that any time you buy time, and you put time between that person's thoughts about suicide and access to a lethal means, you may interrupt the impulse to kill oneself. So we don't have a whole bunch of research because we can't ask people if they have guns and if they're using the gun lock. So it's just a hard thing to get after. We have a hard time studying guns, again, because of the laws and the Second Amendment. So I don't have an easy answer for you. But I will tell you, as a provider, I have very in-depth conversations with every patient I have when they own a firearm. It isn't just, here's a gun lock, put it on your gun, and you know, that's the end of the conversation. We have a very personal conversation about that member's, the meaning the firearm has to them, if they thought about using it before, the importance of the gun lock, why we emphasize the gun lock, what are their warning signs, when will they know that things are getting to a crisis point, who can they involve in their safety plan to keep that gun secure. So do gun locks by themselves work? No, because you can just take the gun lock off and shoot yourself. But if there's a conversation and we enlist our partners in that conversation, you know, I talk to service members about, hey, you know, you have a spouse who's depressed. Let's talk about why you shouldn't have them on the counter right now by your bedside for her benefit. And so you want to make it a conversation. And I think when you do that, you make it personal for the member and they buy in, we might be saving a lot of lives. We just have no way of capturing that. And I wish I had a better answer for you. But anything we can do to put time between the crisis and the lethal mean, that's a good thing. So Caroline just gave me a great point to say that the demand for gun locks has exceeded our supply. So we're going through them. As soon as we send the gun locks out, they're calling us for more gun locks. So hopefully sailors are taking them home and using them because we don't have enough gun locks to go around. We're not allowed to purchase them in our office. We're still trying to get around that. But we're relying on a free supply. And every time they tell us there's free ones, we grab them and the fleet is asking for them. So hopefully we're saving lives. Hope is not a metric, but that's all I got right now.
And I'm showing no further questions in queue at this time.
All right. Well, Dr. Long, thank you for having me, and over to you.
Thank you, Captain Smith. That was a wonderful presentation and discussion and great questions and answers. Thank you all. I hope you know that there's resources that you can go to and people you can see if need be. So thanks again.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.